Hello, y'all. My name's Edwina, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Edwina.
My clean date is 7/10 of 2019. It's not my first clean date. I have three. My first one was in 2014 in May when I went into treatment. And I was seeking change, any type of change, and I didn't know what that was going to look like. Scared shitless, but willing. White-knuckled it because I wasn't willing to do what it took. I would come to meetings and frequent here and there and use it more as a socializing place and a way to be seen as I'm doing well, as long as I'm not using. When I relapsed for 3 or 4 months, came back, had 3.5 years, but I worked the theory program, that half-assed pencil whooped my steps, you know, just put what I thought my sponsor wanted to hear and not the truth. I didn't get vulnerable in those steps. So I got nothing out of it other than some knowledge of what the steps were about. And, you know, I separated myself. I did everything that we're not supposed to do. I quit going to meetings, quit calling my sponsor, quit working steps, quit calling other addicts. And I started to think that I was no longer an addict. So I went back out. When I did that, I had a little bit of a spiritual awakening in that for that 3.5 years. And when I went back out, I lost all of that. That God-sized hole inside of me was completely void and empty again. But I knew that I didn't have to live that way. So that hurt more that time because I felt like my soul was ripped out of me. But I refused to stop. You know, it was more and more and more. First, it was a Friday, and then it was an every other Friday thing that I told myself. But I knew better. You know, I've been around. So I knew that, you know, every day using was, you know, me. That was on me. I had a friend who checked in on me. She would tell me, when you're ready to come back, you know where to go. And when I was ready, I came back. I relapsed on alcohol. So I was sitting there by myself in the dark drinking, and that crazy little thought in my mind, let's get something a little bit stronger. Let's get what you like. And I had already been scrolling on Facebook looking for it. I didn't even know what I was doing. And before I knew it, I had the whole plan of how I had that little bit of money in the bank, go get what I want, do what I need to do to put that money back in the bank, and no one would know how far I went. And my higher power is just like, is this really what you want to do? I could hear it. It was weird. I heard that voice outside of me. And I'm like, you know, I had to look around. I was sitting outside hiding my drinking from my family. I see if there was any neighbors or someone walking by, like knowing what's happening in my head. I answered back out loud once I realized I was really alone. No, because I could see all of it, the depravity, the immorality, all of the things I had done, you know, crawling on the floor when I didn't have to find something that really wasn't there. Hiding in a hotel room because I was too afraid to come out. All those horrors that I had lived through played in my head. And I'm like, okay. Went to a meeting as soon as I came back. I started reading Recovery and Relapse. And that line, lost dreams awaken, new possibilities arise, hit me so hard. That's been like my, what I see in the horizon every time I go through a struggle, but I still couldn't give up who I was and take in the program. I picked a sponsor who was a close friend because that means that I don't have to get honest. I can bullshit her. I wanted to be a liar. I didn't want to be honest. You know, I got the consequences of those actions. You know, a lot of chaos, a lot of insanity, trying to be clean, but still living in the chaos, not living clean. I got with my current sponsor and my whole world turned around for me. Her word is action. And that's, you know, every part of my being now is action. I like in this book, I was reading it, it talks about we don't think our way into a new way of living. We live our way into a new way of thinking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was where I was at. I had to, that fake it till you make it, but I had to do everything that she was doing, my sponsor. I had to do everything that the sisters that I have in recovery were doing. You know, the ones who are thriving, the ones who are into everything, the ones who are part of all this stuff. It, you know, it started to change. Chaos continued to follow me because I still wasn't willing to give up those certain things, those certain behaviors, those certain aspects, those things so ingrained in me from my youth. Before I was the addict before the dope, you know, the lying, manipulation, the integrity wasn't there. I would manipulate anyone that I could, even being clean, just so they would think that I'm doing good. And we ended up starting my steps over from one. And at first it was on men and sex, because that was my issue, I thought, because that's where all the insanity was stemming from. And I realized that I don't know how to have a relationship with anyone, not with my higher power, not with my sponsor, not with the women in the program. I hated women because they were the ones who could see through my bullshit, and they were the ones who would tell me the truth. And I didn't want to hear that. I wanted to hear everything I'm doing is okay as long as you're not using drugs. And I was miserable still on the inside. I was lonely, and I couldn't break that. I had that 3.5 years clean, but I never felt anything because I was always chasing the dope, the drugs. So it was shopping, food, sex, relationships. And that was how I would get those instant gratification hits all the time. And I never had to feel what was going on in here. I could avoid all of it. You know, my grandma passed away during that time. I cried one tear because I was so blocked off from feeling anything that as much as it hurt inside, it wouldn't pour out. And I felt bad for that. But when I came back in, her first anniversary hit, that was a tough one. I felt all of it. That wall that I had built up for all those years, that mask that I wore, that tough mask, no one can see me hurt. No one can see the emotions. I had to show no fear. That fell and crumbled, and that first anniversary hit, and that hurt. That summer after, my aunt got sick with cancer. They found lumps in her breast, and I was in fear, and I didn't know how to handle that. That went into remission. Later on that year, they found mass in her liver, and they found lesions. And that was about December of 2020, and by March of 2021, she passed away from cancer. And I did not know how to handle that kind of pain and grief being clean, and I refused to put the mask back up. So my sponsorship family put me into action. You know, they grabbed me, they put me into service. You know, I'm the secretary of my home group. They got me into H&I. I'm now the secretary of my area H&I. I do as much as I possibly can, to stay present and active. One thing I realized when I was working these steps is, you know, I can say I know to the spiritual principles, brotherly love, honesty, open-mindedness, integrity. You know, I'm like, yeah, I know what those mean. But as I'm working these steps and I'm answering these questions, I want a little bit more. I want something different this time than just working the steps. So I started breaking down these spiritual principles, and I started looking up these 10-letter words that I have an understanding of, but I really don't know what they mean in context of what the steps are saying. And I realized that I didn't know shit. As much as I thought I knew, I always had that ego up of, oh, I know. You don't have to explain it to me. I'm good enough. When I was didn't feel good enough, yeah, I started having these little bits of growth where I would start calling spiritual principles out. I need to act with dignity and grace. I need to not try to just have patience, but tolerance and understanding of what this person's going through. And as I'm working that and I'm putting that into action in my life, I started noticing these changes in who I have around me, how I'm behaving when I'm angry, how I'm treating other people, and how I don't have a desire to manipulate people into believing what I want them to believe about me. And I can be me. I can be that quirky, weird, funny, sometimes absent-minded person and be totally okay with that. Part of the consequences of my disease of addiction is I went from being a little off to like completely bipolar. And I go through these episodes, and it's more manic than anything, and I learned to cope with that. Beginning of this year, I got sick, and I'm sitting there thinking about my aunt and the cancer she had last year. And I was in a great deal of pain. I ended up having to have a hysterectomy, and the whole time I was in fear of cancer because of how this pain was affecting me and how my whole body was not functioning properly. And we wound up doing a hysterectomy, and throughout all this pain, I never had that one thought, that one craving of, I want to get high. I want to take some pills. I want to do something to stop the pain I'm in. I just laid there and I accepted this is where I'm at, but I also talked to other women, my sisters and the people in my sponsorship family who have gone through these kinds of pains and these kinds of troubles. And what can I do to cope with this and get through this part of my life? After the surgery, I started experiencing depression in a way that I've never experienced it, where I lost the will to be. I didn't want to die. I just lost the will to be present. And that scared me. I started isolating. I started not really wanting to talk. And then all of a sudden, one day, I'm like, holy fuck, I don't care if I die. And the whole reason I wanted to be in recovery is because I didn't want to die. And I had to call a doctor. And, you know, that outside help, it helps me with the things that this program has taught me to do. You know, the things that it can't help my brain act right, but I can act my way into a new way of thinking. So I can sit here and try to be social, even though I really don't want to, because my sponsor talks about it in here too. They are the eyes and the ears. You know, my sponsor will call me out on that. Hey, are you okay? Where have you been? And it's helped me. There was so much that I read in here, and I highlighted and underlined. But for me, it wasn't until that I became willing to do anything and everything that it took. Like the speaker said last night, you're a part of this, you're a part of that, you're a part of this, you're a part of that, and I'll do more. And I always seek that more. When my sponsor gives me an assignment, I always give myself 5 assignments stemming off of that. And all of it is definitions. I want to know more. I want to know as much as I possibly can, because every time I start pulling layers off, I'm like, I really don't know what any of this means. That fake it till you make it and wear the mask doesn't mean anything anymore. It's that I can be vulnerable and talk about the hard topics that happened in my life. I can be vulnerable and share where I'm at and how I'm feeling and how this program has saved my life. When I talk about this program, I get this sense of the rock I got today was gratitude, because I tried so hard to stop using on my own to the point of I went insane every time I would try to cut the drugs off. And I was afraid that I was going to die because of the using. I have children, and I was too coward to commit suicide because I didn't want my children to see their mom commit suicide, but I was okay with using until the point of death and being absent from them. That right was wrong and wrong was right was my focal point. When I cried out for help, my children didn't understand it, but today, you know, one's graduated and is an insurance agent. One just graduated and is getting ready to go into college. One is graduating this year. And like the speaker earlier was saying, okay, I'll give you what you want, now go away. That's the kind of mom I was, where I had little fingers under the door, and today I can see them, and they love me, and they talk about things with me. And I've taken the principles of this program and implanted them into my parenting with my children. So you're doing this. Okay, well, you know the consequences here. You want to drink? Okay, well, both your parents are addicts. So these are your consequences. Your friends are doing this. So I'm sorry. These are the consequences. One of their friends passed away. He was shot drug deal went wrong and shot and killed in his home. And my son's like, Mom, I know that this is a consequence of using and this is a part of the lifestyle. I said, okay, yes, it is. But that still means that, you know, you can still feel that. You can still feel the pain and hurt. And I hope that my children don't have to experience those types of consequences from being a part of that, because they can follow me in just as easily. And I try to be honest about that and put that forth into my life in all areas. And when I got that topic, I was just like, you know, I live that theory. I live that reading the steps. I live that just reading all of it and thinking that that could cure me and that could, you know, I could no longer have to be an addict. And it's that everyday thing, that insidious disease that spreads itself throughout all of my life. Yeah, I have to remember that when I'm obsessing on this, I'm like, oh shit, okay, let me get back on track. When I find myself falling backwards and not really wanting to be a part of anymore, I'm like, okay, I have to push myself, even though I don't feel like it. I need this. There's nothing else for me other than this program. That's about all I have.
Hey, family. I'm an addict. My name is Tommy. It feels great, man, to be somewhere a day after payday. I'm in Houston, Texas. You know, I mean, it's a really, really big thing for me because I can remember when, you know, I wasn't capable of leaving out of a 4-block radius, man. The thing I'm going to do is give y'all the message of Narcotics Anonymous, and that message is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Our message is one of hope and a promise of freedom. When all is said and done, our primary purpose can only be to carry the message to the addict who still suffers, because that's all we have to give. That's all we have to give you is freedom. We don't promise you you're going to get your kids back in your life, the career you always wanted, the car you always wanted. However, if you stay on this side of the fence, that stuff would be a lot more easier to obtain. Sponsorship is truly important in this process to me. And my sponsor gave me a suggestion every time before I share to read the last page, the last paragraph of the introduction. And it goes, everything that occurs in the course of NA service must be motivated by the desire to more successfully carry the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. It was for this reason that we began this work. We must always remember that as individuals, groups, and service committees, we are not and should ever be in competition with each other. We work separately and together to help the newcomer and for our common good. We have learned painfully that internal strife cripples our fellowship. It prevents us from providing the services necessary for growth. It is our hope that this book will help the suffering addict find the solution that we have found. Our purpose is to remain clean just for the day and carry the message of recovery. My topic is Narcotics Anonymous is a program of action, not theory. Man, it says here, right, before we got clean, our identity was built on fantasy. Who we could be, would be, should be, or even used to be. In recovery, we connect with the reality. We connect with reality through action. And I can remember when I was struggling. I mean, when I was really, really in the pits of my addiction, right? And I would always say, why me? Why can't I be, you know, upstanding like some of my peers, you know, like some of the guys that I came out of high school? I should be here, You know, I shouldn't be sleeping on this park bench. You know, I had a baseball scholarship that I fucked up. So why am I here? I should be somewhere pitching and playing baseball. You know, but that became a theory after this disease started working on my ass. You know, it became less and less important on what I should have been to, like, wanting to get one more. And she shared about Insidious, right? This disease that I suffer from is very insidious. And insidious means it's alluring, seductive, a gradual change with harmful effects. And that's what this disease was doing to me. It was slowly and methodically just walking my ass into the grave. And I started buying often to the point, right, where I didn't know that I was able to not stop. You know, I felt that I can stop anytime that I wanted to, right? But every time I tried, you know, I was unsuccessful. You know, because I didn't know at that time that obsession and compulsion had anchored itself into my total being. You know, the obsessive part is to do things that I know that's destroying my life, followed by compulsion on once I start, my ass can't stop. It was anchored into me, man. So I didn't know that I had a disease, man, that was incurable and fatal. I just thought that I just didn't have enough money. That was a theory. That was my theory, right? I felt that if I had enough money, I can take care of my family. I can do the things that I want to do. And people would just leave me alone. I'm not hurting anyone. That was a theory. I've learned in this process that every time I went and comped, I took people with me. I took my daughters with me. You know, I took my better half with me. I took me with me. So I had to get a plan of action, man. In recovery and relapse, right, it says we must relearn many things that we have forgotten if we are to survive. I have to learn, I have to break my system down and relearn the things that I did. And that was some hard shit, y'all. That was hard for me to relearn a lot of things that I had forgotten because, like I said, the obsession and the compulsion was anchored into my soul. You know, I had become so accustomed to using and fucking up that I didn't think that it was any other way for me. So I started buying off into the disease, man. You know, and it was steady, slowly walking my ass into my demise, you know. So I can tie this into step three because in step three, you know, it says the word decision implies action. So when I finally came back for this last time, like Edwina said, I relapsed, you know, I would come in here, I would get all this good information from y'all, but when I left from around y'all, I couldn't keep the shit. You know, I would come in here, I would sit down, I would try to pay attention, but the disease was on my ass. Look, early recovery is not easy, man.
No.
I want to get it, but the disease don't want me to get it. I want to do better. I want to be a better father. I know all of this. But the obsession and the compulsion said, man, come on, I got you, man. Just go get one and we'll work on this shit together.
Right.
Man, the disease that I suffer from is self-centered in nature, man. And it didn't care, it still doesn't care how I treat people or what I need to do. You know, I mean, my disease doesn't need, my claim date is May 5th of 2005, right? And my disease don't need any fucking drugs to take my ass up out of here. That's not a theory. That's a fucking reality. It don't need anything for me to take anything mood or mind altering for me to go to the penitentiary, man, to lose my freedom. It don't need nothing of the sort. You know, I've learned that drugs are only a symptom of this disease that I suffer from. You know, my thinking is 90% of my fucking dilemma. This book tells me I don't make good decisions constantly. It tells me that it's imperative that I hang around other recovering addicts at all time or whenever possible. Imperative meaning something of extreme importance. So it's very important, man, that I come in here and I take suggestions from y'all, because I've tried to get clean on my own. You know, I've tried to mail money orders back to myself. And let me tell y'all another thing of insanity. I put my money in my shoe and tied it real tight. So I won't fuck with it. I've tried everything to not use but to stop. Everything but to stop it. So in step two, it says that the first thing in Narcotics Anonymous we do is stop using drugs. And at this point, we begin to feel the pain of living without drugs or anything that will replace it. The next sentence says the pain, not no fucking dope, the pain forces us to seek a power greater than ourselves that will relieve our obsession to use. And I can remember having that kind of pain in my gut, man, when I got to Narcotics Anonymous the last time. The disease was so prevalent in my spirit that I just had given up. But I just didn't want to feel that pain again, man. I didn't want to go back through the pain. So I set my ass here and I listened. I listened. I listened. I took suggestions. I did all of that. And as a result of that, man, I just started feeling a little better here. My wife was talking about, you know, that self-made prison earlier. You know, I opened up the key a little more and my ass started to venture out a little more. You know, I started coming out of my shell. This program of Narcotics Anonymous, man, is the most positive thing that I've done in my fucking entire adult life. Recovery and Relapse says that we have to develop a plan for living. That's what the Narcotics Anonymous program is all about. You know, coming in here and listening to some people who faced my dilemma and found a way out. That's what the Narcotics Anonymous program is all about, man. And I don't take this disease that I suffer from for granted, because some of the positions that I allowed it to put my ass in, I had to develop a plan of action real quick to get out of some of the dilemmas that I was in. Like running for my fucking life. I lost my brother to this disease a few years ago. And I carry that burden with me sometimes, man. That's why I say that sponsorship is truly important, because my brother would call me, right? And he would always say that I'm ready, but every time he called me, he was high as a fucking Georgia pine. Every time he would call me, he wasn't ready to get clean. But a couple of times I got short with him and I hung up on him. But I'm grateful that the last time he called me before he died, I just simply told him, I said, man, ain't you tired yet? Ain't you tired yet, man? And he said, yeah, I'll be ready to go with you next week. I said, what about tomorrow? 2 days later, my brother passed away from this disease, man. The insidiousness of this disease, man. Recovering Relapse says, when we forget the work and the effort that it took us to get a moment of freedom, a lack of gratitude sets in and self-destruction begins. My brother had a lack of gratitude because he cashed in 7 years and he knew what he needed to do. But man, look, obsession and compulsion is real, man. That's look, I'm serious. I'm an obsessive compulsive person. I got 17 years clean, man, and I'm still trying to get to the exact nature of why I did what I did to myself for so many fucking years. I thought I was like a fucking retard, because, you know, I would convince myself that I'm just gonna get one and go home, man. And it wasn't like that I did that for a month here. You know, I did that shit year in and year out. I started to believe the lies, man. And when I get to Narcotics Anonymous and y'all put all that shit to rest, man, y'all said that, look, y'all said this disease falls under mental health. I said, oh. Okay. But y'all also told me that it's a treatable disease. If I want what y'all have to offer, then I have to be willing to take certain steps. I have to be willing to come in here and do the things that y'all need to do if I want some freedom from this disease. Some days, my disease tells me that I am not worth two dead flies with their wings cut off, man. But I give it the finger, because I know that I qualify today, man. You know, I know that I can come in here and listen to y'all and get the medicine that I need to go out in open society and conduct myself like a human being. You know, I'm not living on an animalistic level today. I can go in these people's stores today and not take their shit out of there.
Important.
I can go over people's houses and they don't have to appoint anyone to watch my ass today. See, it's not about me coming in here and sharing my ass off, man, because my disease is telling me right now you're not talking about shit. You know you're on this coastal state, they got some big shit out here. I'm just being honest, man. I'm just being honest. But look, I have to know the difference between how the disease, I have to see, man, I'm so grateful that I can see my disease coming at me, man. And I didn't know how my disease came at me when I first would come around here because I didn't stick my ass around here long enough to know. So therefore, I didn't know a lot about this disease, right? Which brings me to a story, right? There was this young girl. She was sitting on the plane about to open up her book and read it. And an older gentleman came and sat by her. And he said, "Hey, little girl, I would like to get to know my passage. You mind if we talk for a while before you read your book?" She closed the book and said, "Sure, what would you like to talk about?" And the man said, "How about the fact that there's no God, no life after death, and no heaven or earth?" And the little girl said, "That's fine, but can we talk about something first?" He said, "Sure." She said, "You got a deer, you got a horse, and you got a cow. They all eat the same thing, grass, right?" Say, "Now when the deer defecates, it excretes little pellets. When the cow defecates, it comes out in patties. When a horse defecates, it comes out in clumps. Why do you think that is?" The man sat back in his chair, you know, amazed at the little girl's intelligence. And she said, "You know what? I really don't know." So the little girl said, "Are you sure that you're qualified to talk about God, life after death?" "And heaven on earth when you don't know shit." So I didn't know shit, man, when I came in here, how this disease, right, affected me, right? So I had to learn, like Recovery and Relapse said, I had to relearn a lot of things that I have forgotten if I want to survive in this process. You know, I have a disease that's going to be with me until they put the dirt blanket over me. I don't graduate from this shit. That's not a theory either. That's definitely not a theory. And look, I'm going to get this step three, right? Because this topic ties right into that. Step three says that we were trapped by the need for the instant gratification that drugs gave us. During that time, our total being, body, mind, and spirit was dominated by drugs. For a time, it was pleasurable, but when the euphoria began to wear off, we saw the ugly side of addiction. When the euphoria wore off for me, man, it was too motherfucking late. I was in a little too deep at the time. Like I said, the obsession and compulsion had rooted itself in, right? And I didn't know that I was up against a very, very formidable opponent. You know, formidable meanings like immensely large, powerful. I didn't know I was up against that. You know, because it was a real, real gradual change, man. Look, I was the victim of a cold robbery, man. I allowed this disease to rob me of my integrity, you know, my sanity, you know, my common fucking sense. I allowed this disease to do all of that. So when I get to Narcotics Anonymous, man, how do I get help? Step one says that you simply fucking ask for it. It's a real simple program, man, for a complicated ass person like me. And then it says, We found that the higher the drugs took us, the lower they brought us. We faced two choices, right? We faced two choices. Either we suffered the pain of withdrawal or took more drugs. I got tired of fucking getting high, man. I got tired of crying, my tears dropping onto the straight shooter and shit. I'm talking about using against my will, right? You know, I was tired of the strange habits and mannerisms, man, that typified my using. I was tired of seeing people that, you know, this disease just took their soul, man. The thing that drove my ass back in here the last time, right, is going toward the end of my using, I was sitting in the house, right, and I don't usually do drug logs, right? I was sitting in the house, and there's a lot of us around the table, and this beautiful lady had just come in, right? And she sat down, and, you know, I passed her a hit, hoping to get with her a little later, you know. And she took a hit of that shit, and after she hit it, she took off her motherfucking wig.
Oh, shit!
Right? She wrapped that motherfucker up, that hot ass thing in the wig, and it was smoking, right? And she took some yellow rose car freshener and sprayed it on her wig, right? So I'm looking like, but listen, man, everybody around the table was laughing at her, and some people were saying that's just what she do. But seriously, I didn't think that shit was funny. Because we're sitting here, we're smoking the same shit. And it was very apparent to me that she had lost her fucking mind.
She got something different.
So I made a decision, man. I said, I gotta quit smoking this shit, man. I need some fucking help. Because I saw me in her. Because I had them strange habits and mannerisms. You know, I couldn't fucking, like, get off the floor. You know, I'm in the living room getting high all day. Now I'm in the bathroom tearing plaster off the fucking wall. That was my, you know what I'm saying? And I all of that shit came back to me, Bridget. All of that came back. I said, man, I got to quit messing with this stuff, man. I got to get my ass some help, man, before I self-destruct, before I end up walking outside in 100-degree weather with Eskimo coats and shit on. So I had to develop a plan of action, man, if I didn't want that to be my reality, right? I had to develop a plan of action and become willing to do some things that I didn't even want to do. And that was coming here and go through life without using drugs. Because I was so used to masking up my feelings, right? I was so used to masking up my feelings because I didn't want to see what I had become. A complete derelict and a fucking bum. So in order for me not to see that, I medicated myself. I took more drugs more often. Slowly walking my ass to the grave. I'm so grateful, man, that I can come around some people, man, and y'all can identify with some of the most insane shit that I talk about.
Right.
Y'all give me a hug for fucking up my life. But y'all tell me, right, that I can recover. We do recover in here, man. We do recover. If you're new in here, please keep coming back. And keep coming back. And keep coming back. Because this shit works. If an addict like me could get clean,
I smell it. Sorry, man.
Hey, look. Hey, man, it's something to be caught like in a real, real desperate state, man. And I can come into Narcotics Anonymous and y'all say, look, man, all you have to do is be willing to do the things that we do. You know, I have to stop looking at the differences and start looking at the similarities. You know, I have to like say, hey, I am like y'all, and not come in here and say I'm not like y'all. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm not like y'all, but I couldn't hold a fucking job, right? Look, I didn't even have the ability to feed myself. I depended on people to get my ass through the day. Because every time I got over $5 or $6 in my pocket, shit, I'm close to one. And I literally say we often got angry when our loved ones found new interests. I mean, what? That's the disease that I suffer from. You know, I'm fucking up paycheck after paycheck. How dare you date some fucking body else? How dare you get another guy on me? You know what I'm saying? It's just the culmination of this disease, man, has a death. It's death. I want to thank this committee, man, for asking me to come to Houston, Texas. I was on the treadmill this morning in the exercise thing. I'm thinking, I'm walking on the treadmill, and I'm saying, I'm going to hit him with this, I'm going to hit him with that. I'm going to do this. I ain't remember none of that shit. You want to hear God laugh, tell him your plan. But I'm so grateful, man. My message of recovery is based off my experience, man. I don't try to come in here and sound like nobody or critique anyone, you know, because I got enough shit, man, to share for through eternity what I allowed this fucking disease to do to me. So with that being said, I'm going to close and I'm going to read this out of where is that at? It's this story in the back of a story in the basic text. It's a story called What Makes Me Happy. And it says, what makes me happiest in recovery is to see the change in a fellow addict. It's always a great pleasure and surprise to see members change. No matter how many times I've witnessed that change, it always makes me happy. Thank you. Yeah.